Welcome to the Mindset Podcast for guardians of dogs who are just a little rough around the edges. I'm your host, Kajsa van Overbeek, a life coach dedicated to making life with your challenging dog feel less challenging, both by sharing stories of other people's similar experiences and by showing you how you can harness the power of your brain to make it work for you instead of against you. Hi, and welcome to another Mindset episode of Rough Around the Edges. So I'm going to tailor what I will be talking about to our dogs and life with our dogs. But as you listen, I just want to tell you to think about where else in life this shows up for you. So, you know, I strongly believe that our dogs are here to teach us sort of lessons we managed to get out of learning that, you know, we managed to wiggle our way out of learning in other areas of our lives, simply because in those areas we have maybe developed beautiful coping strategies that have allowed us to kind of skirt around the issues. So one of the examples I love giving, and that you will probably continue to hear me give on this podcast, is that of learning how to deal with criticism in so many areas of life. Like work, for example, you can get away with never learning how to deal with the sting and the emotional sort of pain of someone getting angry or ticked off at you, because if you just learn to be really, 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 really good at your job, then no one ever has anything to complain about, and so you don't have to deal with learning the skill of dealing with criticism. Your dog, though, especially if it's a challenging one, but, you know, even if it's your regular run-of-the-mill Disney dog, is, however, going to trigger reactions in other people that you just can't work or train your way out of. And then, now what, right? Because there's going to be other people who just plain don't like dogs. It's just nothing you're going to do, or no amount of sweetness in your dog is going to change their mind. And they might just be annoyed by your dog's mere existence. So now what? Like, now if they, you know, yell at you for that reason or something else, there's no way you can sort of fix that or outwork that or out-train that. Just, it's not there. So there's no longer a way around learning how to process and deal with that sting that you feel when you and your dog get yelled at or get told off, or how you deal is another skill, right? Or dealing with the self-doubt when someone, no matter if they're experienced or not, says, you're doing it all wrong, this dog training, or the way you're treating your dog is all wrong. So in essence, none of the, let me call it mindset stuff, or maybe you should call it meta lessons that your dog is trying to get you to learn are really new. They might just not have been super obvious in other scenarios or in other areas of your life. It just might not have come to light that that was something that maybe you had to learn, or that maybe you were coping your way out of learning. Okay, but as often, I digress. But just keep that in mind as you listen, and just consider where else this could apply. And so what I want to talk about today is change. It's kind of a broad concept, but bear with me. And more importantly, how we prevent ourselves from change. And I think, like, one of the most profound things I ever read or learned about when it comes to change was learning about the stages of change. And now the original research, which I think was sort of originated by, I'm just probably going to butcher the names, Prochaska and Di Clemente, was done in the 70s, and it had to do with creating an understanding of what allowed people who smoked to quit on their own, like without professional help or outside intervention. And that was in the 70s, I want to say. And nowadays, there's a whole body of works, of course, around change and a whole body of research. And as always, not everyone uses the same number of stages of change and the exact same wording, but you know, like none of them use the model, I want to say, as it was created in the 70s, that people have elaborated on it. They've changed it up a little bit, but some of the stages are always present, like the first stage of change, which is called pre-contemplation, or in my words, it's what I call the state of ignorant bliss. For us dog people, I think this is where, you know, like we went about our lives believing that everything is all in how you raise them, or that every dog should be able to be transformed into a Disney dog, or maybe is even a Disney dog. It's, you know, where we happily let our dogs run up to every other dog shouting that they're friendly, believing that that was socialization because, you know, we didn't know about socialization properly. It's where whale eye and dog body language weren't even a thing. Or maybe it's where we were at a point in our lives where we've raised six dogs, no problem. And we were sort of believing that we had this whole thing, you know, the whole dog training thing, dog raising thing all figured out. And it was kind of like life before dog number seven that turned everything upside down. Like, that's pre-contemplation. Then the next stage that is being described as, you know, sort of like the second stage or the whatever number you want to add to it, depending on which version of the model you use, is contemplation. So this is where stuff starts clicking. You know, your dog's running up to everyone, and then you kind of figure, this might not be the greatest course of action in all situations. Or it's, you know, like you put your hand in the food bowl and you get growled at, and you realize that the advice you've been given of, you know, like punishing your dog for that actually results in exacerbation of the behavior. And you kind of start to think, not sure of this course of action. Like, maybe I should try and come up with something else. This is where, I don't know, your brain wonders that if the way you taught your dog to do, you know, like tricks with treats could maybe be used to influence other kinds of behavior. It's basically where you figure out if you want to keep doing what you're doing. And then after that comes the part that all of us love and the part that we use to hold against ourselves the most. And I'm going to come back to that later on. But this is where we prepare. You know, this is where we start to go and scroll Dogstagram to see if there's another way. It's where we order a billion books, like Ask Me How I Know, from Amazon or the Book Depository or wherever it is that, you know, you buy books, maybe. Or where you go to the library, you know, remember those? It's where you go and ask friends how they do stuff. Or it's where you talk to trainers or to vets or behaviorists. It's sort of where we start to wonder, can we do this? Like, can we do something about it? If it's, you know, is it maybe possible to change? This is sort of where, you know, we watch all the YouTube videos and wonder which approach is the right one for whatever change it is that we are planning to make. And then at one point, there's the decision and we start doing things. It's where we sort of snap the sticks of the clapperboard shut and call action. And the stage is also, for that reason, called the action stage. This is where we, actually start training. You know, this is where we get the first minute of separation anxiety training in. Or if we're talking about, you know, better self-care, it's where we leave the house to go to the movies in spite of feeling guilty about leaving our dog alone for the first time. Or it's that moment that we decide to not react to our partner's snide comment on how we train our dog. It's, you know, where you actually transfer the money to someone like me to help you work on mindset work. It's the part that we have traditionally been taught to think of as where change starts. And mind you that I say traditionally, and I want to get back to this in a bit, but, you know, first let me walk you through the next steps, which are maintenance and relapse. So maintenance is where, how to put it, where you consolidate change. It's where, you know, positive reinforcement is upkept and starts to become a habit. It's where you go, oh, right, just because I yelled at my dog and lost my cool, it actually doesn't mean I'm a bad person. I can now forgive myself for this 8 out of 10 times. And I can actually see my outbursts lessen as a result of that. So maintenance. And then there's the other stage, which is relapse. And I want to talk about that in conjunction with the preparation phase. And maybe even a little bit the contemplation phase. Why relapse in conjunction with those? Because, like I said, we tend to want to hold being in any of these phases. So, for example, being in the preparation phase or being in the relapse phase against ourselves a lot of the time. So, do you want to know how often I hear, oh, I have all these ideas, I know what to do, but I'm just not doing it. I just keep buying more books and reading more. But I need to freaking stop reading and start doing. Or the relapse version of this would be, well, you know, like I tried it for a week or two, but it was just too frustrating and I quit. See? That's me. I never see anything through to the end. I mean, I know. Logic would probably dictate I should have given it 5 weeks at least. Maybe 5 months. Or a year. But I just don't have that in me. I seriously suck. I don't know how all those people that keep going for years and years do it. But I didn't. I suck. So I hear this a lot. As in, all the time. As in, I want to say probably from each and every one of my clients at one point or another about something, whether it be the dog or something about themselves. And the way it is said is self-accusatory. Like it means that they've done something wrong, that something has gone wrong. I was supposed to change. I was supposed to take action for my benefit, for my dog's benefit, for my loved one's benefit, and I didn't. Didn't change. Nope. I didn't. Woe is me. Oh, by the way, did I mention I suck already? Because I do, you know, like I really suck. All of that. And this is the crux of the matter. I think that the mistake that we're making here, and I'm going to include myself because I do it because I'm human, this is just a human thing to do, is that we think that only the, I want to say, action plus maintenance stage, you know, like the part where we do stuff, where we actually start doing things and keep up with it, maintain it, that only those stages together equal change, and change is what we want. And so, since you or we or I am are stuck in I want to say semi-eternal preparation and let me first read up more before I can start mode, or since you, we, I fell off the dog training or self-care wagon, or whatever it is for you, then that means you didn't change, and you probably never will. But, and that's what's so powerful about this model, and why it changed so much for me as well, is that when you really truly realize that preparation, pre-contemplation, contemplation, and relapse are just as much a part of change, and that when you are in those stages, you are in fact changing, that you are in change. I don't even know if you can say it that way, but we're going to say it that way, that you are in change, so to say, then you can stop beating yourself up about not being in action or maintenance mode, not being in any of those two stages that we traditionally or are conditioned to think of as this is what changing, and I just want to say changing for the good, because that's usually what we want to change, is about. Because you know what the most damaging self-talk is? That's stuff like, I should stop reading books and start doing something, but, you know, I probably never will. Because, you know, if I had truly wanted to do something about it, then I would have done it already. Really? Stop it. Seriously, I mean it. Like, all that energy, and this is where the real problem lies. Like, all that energy that you're spending on self-flagellation, that's energy that's wasted. That's energy that you can spend in another way. So what if you simply gave yourself permission to feel good about your preparation? Or, you know, to at minimum care less about how much time you have or are spending on it. You have spent on it or are spending on it. Whatever. That's probably way more likely to get you to move on to the action piece of the whole sort of change cycle than getting upset with yourself. So it's the same thing when you say, excuse my language, like, F it, this isn't working, and then you fall back into old patterns. Like, when you consider that relapse is just simply part of change, of the change cycle, or at least it can be, obviously it doesn't have to be, but it can be, that it means nothing bad, and that you just get to jump right back in, you can skip the drama. You know, when it's like, I relapsed? Ah, okay, let's try again. And we skip the whole, ooh, this is horrible, everything's gone down a drain, this will never work drama. You save time. You go back. You go like, okay, let's, you know, step back into action. Or maybe we think about it a little bit more, or we prepare a little bit more, and we figure out we want to try a different avenue. But we just don't stay in this whole woe is me, I relapsed drama, I can never change drama, because in fact relapse is part of change. So change is not just action. Change is gaining awareness about your life, your dog. It's the whole considering which things are serving me. Which things do I maybe want to shake up a little? No matter how long or no matter what amount of consideration it takes. It's action, it's repetition, and it's also falling flat on your face and then trying again. It's just, it's all of it. It's when you realize that you haven't been consistent in your counterconditioning and desensitization, and instead of, you know, deeming that a failure and then bailing out altogether, it's where you simply go, huh, okay, relapse phase of change, duh, let's get back to it, without all the drama. Because, do you know what's pointless? Pointless is beating yourself up about why it took you 2 years before you started taking your dog's aggression seriously enough to consider hiring a trainer. It's just like, use the time and energy that you would normally spend agonizing over how it took you 2 years to do what you can now in this moment. And so I'm just thinking, like, remember how I told you at the beginning to look for parallels with other areas in your life and like where else it could show up? Like, what that could look like would be, I want to say, like, thinking about leaving a relationship or a job, you know, like changing jobs, but not actually having taken any steps yet and then getting annoyed with yourself over it. Or crazy, maybe simple or not so simple stuff of like, oh, maybe I should cut my long hair short, but then not having done it yet and then calling yourself a wuss. Or heck, it might be listening to this podcast and then thinking about coaching and then not having taken any further steps yet and ending up admonishing yourself for not taking your mental health seriously enough. It's instead of all this negative at the end, you know, the getting annoyed with yourself, the telling yourself you're not taking it seriously enough, all of that, instead of that, just giving yourself grace for being in the middle of change. And I really truly mean in the middle of it. So I hope this realization that change is more than action and maintenance, that it's all of these things, I hope that feels kind of liberating. It does to me, for sure. And when I feel that way, I know that I personally, and it works like this for just about everyone, that I'm more likely to then actually move on towards the action step to start doing something. Because when I feel good, you know, like I want to get stuff in motion. When I feel terrible, I'm just beating myself up. I'm like, no, then I don't want to get in motion. I just want to open a bag of potato chips and crash on the couch. So there. And just as sort of as an afterthought, you can also sort of apply this sort of stages of change model. That's what I'm just going to call it. Stages of change model to see your dog's behavior in a different light. Because, you know, I keep drawing the parallels. They're sentient mammals, just like us. So when you realize that relapse is just a normal part of change, I wonder if thinking of it that way helps you then to just, you know, like when your dog has just lunged again for the first time in a while, or, you know, when your dog with separation anxiety just started drooling from stress after only 2 minutes of being alone when you'd actually managed to build up to 10 minutes, whether seeing it that way helps you then just take a breath and go, okay, let's reset and go again. The only thing really that you need to change is beating yourself up over the way in which you're doing change. And by the way, changing that process will have the same pitfalls because, again, it's change. So good luck. And then, by the way, in coaching, we spend a lot of time on creating awareness around all of this. In other words, we spend a lot of time in the contemplation and preparation phases. And that's 100% okay, because again, that is change. So if, you know, you want to learn how to be nicer to yourself and as a consequence to all the living beings in your life, coach with me, and we're just going to dive a whole lot deeper. That's what I have for you today. Hope it was useful. Go not beat yourself up about how you do change. You can find the show notes to this episode and everything coaching on my website, kaisevanoverbeek.com. or you can go find us on Instagram at the Rust Cattle Dog, or maybe even Facebook, Kaisa van Overbeek Coaching. If you like listening to this podcast, might I ask you for a good review on whichever platform you're listening to the podcast to, because it helps us move up in the rating, which helps us be found more easily so that more people can listen to this, more people can benefit from it, more people can feel, as I always say, less alone in where they stand with their dogs.